and simply made Godzilla the informal mascot or archetype for Wicked Issues.
Welcome back to the Cities Rematch podcast, the show we are looking into how we can learn from each other's experiences and become the best urban change makers we can be. I'm your voice of choice, Johannes Riegler, and this is
Godzilla's Fury for Reimagining Cities.
Yeah, that was a bit too dramatic, I guess. But it's the season finale, and this is a little bit of a party episode. And you need to listen closely today to find out about the truth and secrets behind the Cities Reimagined and what is going to happen in the future and what that has to do with the old Japanese Godzilla squeals, do-it-yourself practices, power brokers, and the band Kraftwerk. So we really have reached the end of season one, and I'm super happy to have Jonas Bühlund on the show again. You might have heard the show where he was on Cities Reimagined on Reimagining Urban Futures a couple of months back. The last months have been quite a ride, I tell you. So we had thousands of downloads of the podcast and countless of interactions on social media and emails and comments and conversations on Cities Reimagined. And I'm super happy and grateful that you stuck with me and went on this journey together with me. So reflecting on the last 11 or 13, depending on how you count, episodes of Cities Reimagined, I really recognized soon after starting the podcast that producing the show took a specific twist for me. It was not only about producing a podcast anymore, it became something larger than that, actually. It became part of a larger learning story on urban matters, of linking people, topics, approaches, and making them accessible to a broader audience. But it was not only that, it was also a way for me to distill key messages behind the stories and narratives people brought onto the show. My guest today, Jonas Bühlund, is a researcher at the Royal University of Technology, KTH, in Stockholm, Sweden. And he's also a musician. So you need to stick around to the end of the episode to find out about his special Godzilla remix of the Cities Reimagined jingle. If you like the content of the show, please subscribe to the channel, rate it, leave a comment, follow us on social media, just like Instagram, to find out more background stories on the show, and let me know what you think of it. Give me your feedback by sending an email at johannes@anthropocene.city. That's all for the monologue today. Enjoy this wild episode called Godzilla's Fury for Reimagining Cities.
Okay, let's start.
Bring it on.
Hi, Jonas. How are you doing?
I'm fine. It's okay.
It's okay. I'm very well. I got up at 6 this morning, so I have an early schedule nowadays. And I already sat on the balcony preparing for our talk. So it was a good slow morning already, although it's Friday. It's not just weekend yet.
Yeah, I think this is a very good Friday activity.
Yeah, I think so too. So now it's 10 for everybody listening. How is the metropolis of Gnesta on this Friday morning?
It's nice. It's, how do you say, gray, bluish sky, typical March sky, high clouds, but thick and dense, and everybody is waiting for the rains in the weekend.
Jonas, the regular listeners of Cities Reimagined might remember you from, I think it was episode 3, where you and Josephine Wangel were on the show to talk about urban futures. So you're not only an urban researcher, I would also say you're a musician, and you're doing Taekwondo as well, right?
Yes.
Yes. So I have one question for you. And because I worked with you for a couple of years, and I know that you draw your inspiration from a lot of different sources, not only urban related sources. And I was wondering, how does this non-urban stuff you're doing, like Taekwondo, being a musician, playing in bands, how does that influence your practice and your thinking, your creativity on urban related things?
I'm not sure. In both Taekwondo and in music, it is, there are some analogies to also working, maybe not when I'm working alone. Well, there is something to that as well, finding rhythms, finding things which has a, you can sense when it has a beat and how you can be, how you can learn techniques in order to improvise and be creative. That's a typical thing. And both in kind of martial arts, that's kind of a trick where there's seemingly a lot of discipline. But if you're sparring and if you think about it as self-defense, you also need to be able to improvise quite quickly, mm-hmm. but still have a lot of technique in your muscle memory. And it's similar with playing music, creating music alone, or also, especially if you're playing in a band, and how you are, how to, as some other musicians call it, how to get yourself out of the way, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
To make things that are inviting, that are how you invite others to also be able to shine.
Yeah.
Interesting thing.
Yeah.
That's also how we train in the martial arts. It's like, how can we train with each other, not against each other? Is a saying. Kind of.
But it sounds to me that it's very much both in martial arts, Taekwondo, and being a musician, it also relates to all the experiences you had in the past, what you learned in the past, the impulses, the creativity which was exposed to you, to coming back to the discussion actually we had with Josephine, you were exposed to, which you at some point later you might be able to make sense out of that. And I think often it is with urban studies and with urbanism, it's a bit similar.
Yes. Quite so. I mean, one part in the, I mean, it always, of course, depends on what aspects of urban studies you are doing, kind of, but just a way of finding, let's say, the stories, the interesting mysteries and so on, it has sometimes a similar kind of, you may draw upon what you've been exposed to find mm-hmm. it interesting, of course, but sometimes I can also have a sense that, oh, but this, it swings, right?
Mm-hmm.
It has a groove, it has something that I like, which is hard to pin down, a sense of it. And sometimes it may also be because of the kind of the comedy that I like, for example, Monty Python.
Yeah.
How that influences what kinds of urban stuff that I find interesting and worthy of kind of examination usually has some kind of bizarre comedy around it.
Is Monty Python like urban policy making?
I think so.
Yeah.
A lot. Maybe unintentionally at times, but yeah. Sometimes the effects are quite similar, one might say.
Jonas, I invited you again to Cities Reimagined, and I'm very thankful that you are taking the time again to reflect what has happened in the first season of Cities Reimagined. So this episode is a bit of a season finale. It will be very dramatic. The truth will come out. All the hidden layers between and under the episodes will be exposed. I'm not sure that that will happen, but I would like to reflect with you on the show and what has happened. What were three key moments for you in season one of Cities Reimagined?
Well, first of all, I would say looking at the podcast and what has happened over half a year or so, a little bit more, congratulations, I would like to say to a wonderful set of conversations. I mean, I must say, I truly enjoyed it, listening to a lot of it. And of course, okay, so I made some notes. Three key moments, I think City Mind was one, and I'm not mm-hmm. taking them in order now.
Yeah.
I'm taking kind of episodes. City Mind because Sophie and Jim's perspective on the emergent city, the changing city. I think that their way of working with collective and a kind of a non-arrogant research that yeah. they enable is I thought that was quite hopeful. Also the episode on cultural centers, which I in my head was on provisional spaces, but it's more than that, of course. But Tiffany's kind of transnational networking aspects and doing what you're passionate about locally, I thought that was interesting, the kind of the networking, the almost global networking and very local action. And there was that kind of punk ethos in there. And the third one, I actually kind of collude. Alexander and the urban food and agroecology, Ukraine and the urban food, because they were articulating kind of the urban collective or conviviality, to use a very technical term.
What is that?
In the social conviviality, how to live together, principles for living together, more or less, that they were both talking about, I thought was also kind of key, even if I know it's a bit more conceptual, but they both tried to ground it very well, those two episodes.
Yeah, for me, it was also, there was so much key messages coming out, or so much interesting conversations in all of these episodes, where you can just, I think there's so much to learn, unpack, and hopefully, coming back to what we started with today, people will listen to it and being exposed or hearing new insights in a way, and come back to a later stage to this inspiration, hopefully. But for me, what I was very interested in, and I think I still have way to go to improve that, but it is to show the people and the motivations behind projects and knowledge produced, because it is so often that we, you know, go to conferences, be somewhere where you present a project, you you know, you talk about what you're doing, what the aim of a project is, what urban challenge you're addressing, but there's rarely a space where you talk about the motivation, where you come from personally. And I think with Cities Reimagined, with the first season, it somehow succeeded to break the shell of that a little bit, to go a little bit deeper, what motivates people. So what are the stories behind? I remember the Luisa Bravo in the first episode talking about her childhood and teenage memories of public spaces in Italy, which ultimately led her to focus on public space research and working with that. But there's also more stories hidden behind that. We talked about it when how we first were going to the bigger cities and being somehow impressed by that. And there's so much different motivations also with City Mind, with Jim and Sophie, who brought a different perspective to that. There was a recurring topic of punk and hardcore somehow in this ethic. But also it showed with the conversation with Stefan Fugger, also coming from a very different angle of local urban journalism, which doesn't have an urbanism focus as such, that there is so many different perspectives and so many different ambitions and motivations to dive into urban stuff, let's call it like that. And I wanted to showcase or show that a little bit on the show. So how would you sum up season one? What did it add to a broader debate on urbanism, would you say?
Yeah. That's a kind of a tricky question. I don't think there is a broader debate on urbanism, actually. I mean, sometimes in different contexts, it may seem as this is the big debate on urbanism, but then there are so many debates going on in parallel, depending on where you are. If you're in Brussels in a policy setting, or if you're in an activist camp, or if you are in some engineering sector and so on. I think some efforts are made to frame urbanity in single statements, like in policy. Mm-hmm. And for example, like research like Richard Sennett, he has a way of doing that sometimes, right? But it's usually quite obvious that it's only about key aspects of, for certain parts of how humans can live their lives together and in between urban settings. So I think that the kind of the important thing, if we're thinking about a broader debate on urbanism, is, or perhaps the challenge is to keep in mind all of these different ways of living and understanding the city, right? Mm-hmm. Contemporary human societies even more so, but the urban part of it, and shaping through that a broader sense of what the urban is. And I think, well, to preempt a little bit, something that we've been thinking about is that it shows the need for squirrels, to
yeah,
put it that way, and making friends with Godzilla.
Oh yeah, Godzilla. We will come back to that hopefully, yeah, today. But need to unveil so, that.
But yeah, the question was particularly right on season one.
Yeah.
I just had to talk about that sense of the broader urban debate because it's rarely in singular. But I think season one was a bit like it was drawing by numbers. Do you do that? Is that an English expression where you have a picture, but you have nodes identified by numbers and then you draw and suddenly there's a little elephant or something?
Yeah.
Or Godzilla.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about what kinds of urbanities that are emerging from the sample of about, I don't know, was it 12 episodes? 12,
yeah, it was 11 full ones, and in total it was 13. So with the bonus on the trailer.
So that this is a set of aspects of imagining or reimagining the city across the world today. So what reimaginations are kind of coming forward through, if we draw through all these numbers? I think that's an exercise to do, and I think I'm still trying to do it. You mentioned to me that it has been a longer journey of learning, right?
Yeah.
The picaresque, as you would say in literature, like Voltaire and Candide. So I think that there is also to this a kind of a naive stance. It's like, for example, approaching urban wildlife or African urbanity with honest curiosity and as much prejudice open, I mean, transparent mm-hmm. as possible. And hence, in that way, taking a naive stance but not being naive, I think that's a characterization of the season, which is very good for me.
Yeah.
I think that's a kind of an humble approach to it. But it also makes me very curious as to what you actually learned, right? And for this conversation where I'm listening a lot to what you've learned, and one of the red threads, one of these kinds of drawing by numbers and the journey, I think, is what you already mentioned, is the do-it-yourself practices and aesthetics, right?
Mm-hmm.
That kind of punk ethos that you were surprisingly, you were commenting in some of the episodes, hey, now I'm hearing that you also have a punk background. Oh, and you also. Yeah, that's interesting. So that kind of, let's say, the attitude of not waiting for permission to do important stuff seems to be an important kind of line to draw mm-hmm. through all the episodes.
Yeah.
But also, there is something here. It's not just doing, not just rushing away, and I don't need permission. But there's also a kind of a sense to make sure how you reflect upon if it's wise to do it. So I think that's kind of also important.
Mm-hmm. What I found very interesting with season one is that it showed this very local aspects to urban, I just call it urban stuff, you know, because skateboarding per se is not an urbanist topic, if you will. You know, building a skate park in a suburb of Peru, I don't think many people involved in urbanism would see that as something related to urban transitions. But at the same time, you have I had the conversation with Alexander on, you know, reimagining Ukrainian cities after the war, which is, you know, a complete different topic on a complete different scale on a you know, it, and then at the same time, I had a conversation with Paul Curie, who talked about, basically, I wouldn't say for the whole of Africa, but he covered aspects of urbanism across Africa, which has another scale to the debate.
Yeah, exactly. So these are very different perspectives, but the sharing a kind of let's say an ethos or kind of many times sharing a way, an attitude towards the work, which is, I think, is the interesting aspects. And as you say, that it's because it's urban stuff. So we could, I think we could do, it's not just that urban farming, urban agriculture is for some people still a bit odd, but I think we could just put urban in front of anything and trying to see if there is an episode to be done about it.
That would be an interesting mix.
Yeah. All over the world, we probably would find an example of however unimaginable it would be to do in a city, you'd find someone doing it. Like it's that famous video, for example, from Dinosaur Jr., I think, when they're just driving around Manhattan or New York, Manhattan, in a golf car and playing golf. And not in the parks, but everywhere. And I think so we also saw later on that there is actually urban golf.
That's so funny. That's what I did in the teenage years. We bought a club, a golf club for a couple of euros. Maybe it was shilling back then still, when a sports shop closed down. And then we played golf everywhere, in parks, in, in on the street and so on. And it was a great experience also, because it was, before becoming an urbanist, it was a reimagining cities kind of situation.
Yep.
So let me try one thing. I'm not sure if I will put that on a podcast, but I open ChatGPT and I say, what should I put in?
Give me a list of stuff.
Give me a list of stuff.
10, maximum 10.
Of course, here's a diverse list of things you might be interested, or you might be find interesting or useful. Book recommendation, travel destination, gadget, hobby, movie, recipe to try, online course, fitness activity, podcast, do-it-yourself project. Okay, so we have an urban book recommendation, urban travel destination, urban gadget, an urban hobby, urban movie, urban recipe, urban online course, urban fitness activity, urban podcast. Yeah, that's easy. And urban DIY project. So we have the topics for the next season.
Yeah, you have 10 topics there, right?
Yeah.
You can do an episode about urban podcasting.
Yeah. There's more people doing urban podcasts. Maybe I actually thought about that.
I think you have to publish this list on Instagram and then have people like telling you if they have any recommendations or ideas.
Yeah. I'm a bit disappointed, I have to say. I thought it would have been funnier now. The 10 recommendations, that's a bit random. Well, we tried. Well,
but that's the thing with ChatGPT and also the visuals that AI seems to be producing at the moment. It always turns out a little bit less exciting than one would hope. Sometimes surprising and fascinating, but always slightly less surprising. A bit like shutterstock images of meetings or LinkedIn kind of postings.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. But coming back to season one, what do you think were the deep buried secrets in season one? What was the drama we found?
You see my hesitation. I'm ing a lot. I think I've learned a lot, but there's still something elusive, secretive about how the city can be reimagined. From what to what and for whom? I think that's still that's that's a deep bird secret I can't really have out in the daylight yet from the episodes. I think we still need to explore a little bit more on that. From what to what and for whom?
I think that's not so. We will never succeed in being clear in that.
No.
It will be always a reimagining one aspect for specific people, for specific interests also, which comes together then and manifests in urban space.
Yeah, I think that's the trick. Rather. It's not always easy. It's not always the point to give a kind of a synthesis and make a clear statement.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what I was on to.
What were the mysteries we solved? What was the clue? What was the detective work we did over the first season? What was the mysteries, the murder solved?
Yeah. Again, I think that's the interesting thing. I thought of it this way. Maybe the urban mysteries, or it's the urban transitions that they are like planning an intentional change. And of course, I say that because that's one of the kind of research topics I do. Mm-hmm. But they rarely turn out as you imagine them, right? Also, one should be very careful for what one wishes for. Maybe that's one of the mysteries, not solved, but pointed at.
In what way? But, can you be more specific?
Yeah, because I mean, it's kind of an old saying, like with Aladdin and having wishes. Of course, powers, the universe can grant you wishes, but it also comes with unexpected kind of consequences as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
We can never just have those mysteries. There is a mystery around how still, and I think that's especially so for urban transitions, that when we want to change in a certain way and when we do it, there's also a ton of other things, a lot of other things that changed as well, which we perhaps weren't ready for. There's something in the episodes that points to this and how to actually work with that kind of, in technical terms, you would call it probably externalities, but I mean, both positive and negative ones. How do you take care of the positive ones? How do you kind of pick up the challenge of the negative ones and so on?
That leads us to Godzilla, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So for everybody out there who doesn't know what we mean by Godzilla, that is a bit of an internal joke we have. And it leads back to a presentation I gave, I think, 6-7 years ago, once in Brussels, which I think confused a lot of people. But we kept the narrative going. So it was about how complex urban development is, and how complex urbanism is, and how wicked it is. What a wicked issue it is by bringing together these complexities between disciplines, interests, fields of work as well. And it is so complex that you cannot solve it. And I just compared it to Godzilla, because if you try to get rid of Godzilla in, let's say, with technological solutions, so basically by shooting rockets at Godzilla, Godzilla doesn't mind. Godzilla will go further and will become more angry and will let you feel the consequences of your actions. And it is a bit similar to in urbanism, where you might try to not kill Godzilla, so break down the complexity, but actually work with it. So befriend Godzilla, make him somehow, you will never understand Godzilla and his actions fully, but you might be able to make him your pet in a way, or make him your friend, you know, your odd friend you don't really understand, but make him go along with you.
Yeah, I think I remember that, and I think what you actually did, I remember, I mean, how I experienced it was that we had been started talking about urban dilemmas and wicked issues. And you'd been kind of around in some projects talking about super wicked issues. And simply made Godzilla the informal mascot or yeah. archetype for wicked issues. And I wouldn't like to say monster. Of course, it's the same kind of mystery, but it was to talk about urban issues, environmental, economic, innovation dynamics, public administration practices out of hand, for example. Yeah. So a bit like Frankenstein's monster, right? It only becomes monstrous when we don't care about it, when we don't love it, when yeah. we don't make friends with it, so to speak. So I thought of that idea was somehow to give the very abstract nature of urban dilemmas and wicked issue a face. A personality. So that I think that's why it stuck and it kept on popping up in PowerPoints over the years. And only a few who knew about it kind of saw it even. But that kind of personality wrecking urban landscapes, and it is reckless yet misunderstood. I think sometimes I also felt planning practitioners or anyone who was trying to do urban policy was also kind of in that Godzilla genre.
Yeah.
But so I've been thinking a little bit about this since we are talking a lot about Godzilla and the kind of fury that's involved in that, the mystery and the fury, that wicked issues and dilemmas, they tend to shape what one could call fire spaces. I mean, not fires like burning cities, but fire spaces are spaces where there is a lot of friction and controversy, right? And policy hates this, but it means that you have to work with a lot of uncomfortable tolerance, perhaps. Mm-hmm. It takes time, takes a lot of time, and trust. It needs a lot of trust. So this is far from the kind of common Western techno-rational approach of looking for perhaps quick fixes, looking for solutions. And to bring on that, the episodes also point at is that this kind of challenge, one of the better descriptions I've read, is actually situated on Mars in Kim Stanley Robinson's Mars trilogy. It's worthy of a read or a listen to when it comes to these kinds of wicked issues that constantly pop up, and also the kind of working with very different angles, aspects, perspectives on how to live together.
Mm-hmm.
So, because added to this, there is this kind of activism, do-it-yourself, local community actors that are not always seen with good eyes by informal yeah. politics and power brokers, or formal politics and power brokers, right? So they are small or large monsters, depending on the situation.
Yeah,
but what happens if policy would start to truly love them, right? Would they be loved to death? As I seem to remember Sophie and Jim of CityMind, they fear that, right? But if they really, if policy is such a, you know, straw figure of something, but there is something to how different types of actors could start getting near to each other with tolerance and with care, I guess.
Yeah. And I really like that we keep the Godzilla going. And now it's out there. I hope when people see a Godzilla now, they think of wicked urban issues and they think about your comment just now.
I mean, yeah, I think we were maybe, you could count us on one hand who knew what Godzilla stands for.
Yeah, now it's out there. Now everybody does.
Yeah.
That's good.
So welcome to the club, dear listeners.
Welcome to the club, everybody. Feel invited to put little Godzillas on your PowerPoints. You know, it is from now on a bit of a secret sign that when Godzilla is on your slides, you are one of those who understand.
Yeah. And of course, I think many times one can simply just use the emoji for Tyrannosaurus Rex, I think it is. I think
that's
our
a pro
stand-in.
Tip.
Yeah.
That is the pro tip. Yeah. Okay, coming back to Cities Reimagined. So I have to say I'm quite happy with the content and the creation of the of season one, how it turned out. So some of the topics I planned on having on the show from the very beginning when I started Cities Reimagined, some just popped in for various reasons, like the skateboarding one in Peru, which I found very a very interesting angle to it. And then it was Christian Fischer saying, hey, I have this documentary coming. And then it just made sense. What do you think? Did we cover, what aspects did we not cover? What was not in there? What could have been in there? And what is there missed for season, what we might be able to pick up in season two?
I'm not sure about topics, especially. I think about this way. Maybe there are more mysteries out there.
Yeah.
That you don't solve, you don't explain it. It's not like Mythbusters or anything, but rather. I was thinking about the kind of re-enchantment that we sometimes also need, that mysteries are also kind of drivers, inspiration for just keep on doing what you do.
Yeah.
Seeing like your everyday places, spaces, urban public spaces, perhaps in a slightly different light means that, oh, there's something, it might be exciting or it might make you angry or passionate, mm-hmm. even more passionate about the work you do. But that's a very conceptual and abstract answer.
So very practical, breaking it down. I think for season two, I would like to have more city administration on the show, because I think they are not very well represented in this debate yet, at least not on Cities Reimagined. So it would be interesting to have a person who's very visionary also to, not reinforce development strategies, let's put it like that, a bit boring stuff, but like really goes into a visionary process to reimagine a city with people living in the city and with what it means also in terms of public administration to go beyond the silos of, the sectoral approach of mobility and environment and so on, because I think there's a lot of challenges. And I would really like to have an honest conversation about these issues.
Yeah, I think you're right. I didn't want to propose it since I do a lot of research on public administration.
Yeah.
And how they are trying, or of course, they're seen as these kind of monolith sometimes, but it's just a lot of very different types of persons and organizations that we are talking about when we're talking about public administrations. And I think also not a few of them that I've met in our work are actually very passionate about trying to find new connections. And they are very kind of sometimes sincere, but very mindful of what exactly they can do, what they are allowed to do in terms of mandate, etc. But I think that there is usually a kind of a passion in there. Sometimes it's not. And so that kind of an honest conversation might be very interesting. So that kind of brings me to what I thought about more as a thinking about the second season, as it would continue this, let's say, mysteries and red thread around do-it-yourself or what you can do, perhaps as a person, because that's a conversation, right? But that they're looking at the context, that there are a lot of new ways of connecting. There is an intuition there, and I'm also drawing about the Godzilla thinking.
Like, mm-hmm.
What is sustainable development with a healthy dose of love added, for example?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But love in the kind of, not the romantic type of what do I get, kind of what kind of state am I in, but rather how can I care for this? How can I be in a regenerative ethos about this?
Yeah.
But then that's where I think the public administrations, policy makers, other types of actors might get into the conversation as well.
Very interesting that you bring up love or this kind of perspective, because it links to a notion of caring and a notion of emotions and more, you know, more personal, more soft stuff. Whereas in urbanism, it's too often, I would say, you know, focused on the facts, focused on the hard stuff, focused on the concrete.
Yeah. Okay. So first of all, I would like to avoid the adjectives hard and soft, since it's quite phallocentric. Quite simply, it usually goes for facts and so on, but you can talk about it in different ways and still have the same meaning. I mean, if it's graspable or not. The contours of facts and the contours of understandings and so on. But yeah, there is a kind of a logic of care that I think could be a bit way. And I'm inspired by some of my master's students who are kind of reading up on feminist theories about architecture of care and how to do design care as a design principle and so on. But how, perhaps it's also about how we find the freedom to act with care rather than just push an agenda of freedom of choice. Mm-hmm. Is something that I see as a kind of a theme. And okay, so if I go into it a little bit, there is a kind of a Western concept of freedom that is somehow, in the last instance, free from responsibilities or connections, even, mm-hmm. right? And it's probably one reason that why we have this rampant type of neoliberal capitalism, and that kind of choice is felt like a right, apart from being right-wing many times, because it's a very powerful aesthetic. And also for a lot of the people on the left side and the activists, there is this kind of freedom that you're not connected to the wrong stuff, so to speak. But care kind of has the potential to perhaps put that in a different light. As care is about connections, and some of them are, you're not free to choose, but you can become very free in them or fulfilled and feel kind of that action is something that you can do stuff because of the connections, because of your nurturing connections, because you're feeding connections and so on. So there's been a lot of that and some types of feminist science and technology studies as well. And I think that's where we're getting near to the principle of being regenerative.
Right. And I think
the fulfillment of giving kind of.
Yeah, I want to pick your brain on that as well, because I, at the moment, I see this care for, or this regenerative principle, regenerative idea for caring for the planet and for humans or for people at the same time, as very cutting edge and coming in more and more in urban studies. And I think this is, at least for me, this is one of the most interesting places, topics at the moment, which are developing in practice, but also in thinking about it, and eventually also policy. I don't know, I haven't seen too much about it yet, because people are still stuck with their idea of their GDP growth and on this kind of old school thinking, which limits everything, all the other thinking in a certain way, I would say. I just inattentionally said old school thinking, but I somehow, maybe that describes it very well. What's your take on this?
Well, maybe not that it's old school, perhaps in that sense, but what I've also heard a lot from people who are working close to planning practitioners and also some of the investigations I've been part of myself, there is a sense sometimes that we're getting directives and we're doing this, but we're supposed to do the other thing, right? So that there is a kind of a disconnect, a dissonance, if you will, between what the job should be about and what you clearly see as this needs to be done and what you can do and what you're allowed to do, etc. And I think even politicians, local politicians, regional politicians, national politicians also feel this at times. So I wouldn't blame politicians for setting this up. It's more of a situation that kind of sets a scene where you can act in certain ways and you can't act in others.
Yeah, you're stuck.
Yeah, which probably makes some of these policymakers and planning practitioners perhaps, I wouldn't say jealous of the activists, so to speak, even if some don't like the label, but that you have in the first season, right? But we're also coming back to something that you mentioned just before we started, the kind of the bike that's in your living room, which you haven't got around to repair for quite some time. And I started thinking about that kind of care, as in that old book, Zen and the Art of Repairing Motorcycles, or the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. There is a similar kind of, even if that's a lot more male coded, but there's a similar kind of thing around thinking and doing things with care. It doesn't necessarily mean that everything will be successful or, you know, come out great, but it might mean that you can carve out some space, time, to try to do what feels right. And that might be important, but maybe that's more hypothetical. But here I'm going to go into kind of urban transformations from this point and say that this might be about going from information and data that we have for, you know, problems that AI can help us with, of course, but there's a lot of digitalization, but we get a lot of knowledge on what a problem is or what's going on, right? And then there we go to knowledge, and that's been mainly our job in research and innovation programming and so on. There are probably thousands of papers and reports that are saying something, producing, you know, providing knowledge on gaps and issues of some kinds. But that knowledge on what is needed for urban transformations is probably only part of the mix. I think the what you may be kind of searching for is also the capacities among different actors to do transformations. So it's not just about individual training or one or the other decision-making support tool. So this is about setting up resources for actors to move between settings, perhaps sectors, and generating wisdom, hopefully. Mm-hmm. Wisdom is an interesting word, of course, but it's about care, kind of driven by an ethos of care, perhaps.
Great. I think that for some listeners, that might sound a bit abstract, but I think this captures very well what we have been working on or talking about the last weeks and months, right?
Yeah.
So shall we go into that a little bit? Because I actually like this, a very transparent process of what we work on and see where it leads us. So just to let you know, Jonas and I have been working on an idea called Anthropocene City. Well, it's not an idea. The idea is more what Anthropocene City is. So it could be a kind of platform or an initiative for urban learning, for connecting knowledge with policy and other urban actors to actually cultivate the wisdom required for reimagining cities or for doing things differently in cities. And at the moment, there's a kind of gap between those, I would say, oftentimes, because there is the knowledge, the production of knowledge and experiences, which is often coming out of the, you know, the funding logic of being financed for 3-4 years. But then there's a gap on what to do with that. Some cities and in some cases, it might be taken up by a longer process of experimentation and being used very strategically, while in others it would just end up in a report and in a kind of communication logic, which goes from, you know, we have some findings, we throw them out there, do with it what you want. And that usually that doesn't fly. That doesn't lead to a bigger transformation in other cities. So we are kind of working on that.
Yeah, kind of to be continued.
But I think
that it kind of grows out of the podcast season one.
Yeah.
Some of the conclusions are kind of fed into and probably made more into a very typical consultancy prospect sheet. But, you know,
yeah,
you have to do that as well. But I think that season two is also interesting as a kind of a lab to try some of these thoughts.
Yeah, right. And I have to say that you're absolutely right. I think while doing these talks, I wouldn't call it interviews, but having these conversations with people working on reimagining cities, I at some point found out, wait a minute, this is a bit more than just having a conversation. This is about, you know, getting personal perspective, but also distilling kind of the gist out of what is very often not written in reports and cannot be easily communicated. So that's the thinking behind that. And hopefully you will hear about that. It will go eventually in a direction where we can publish more stuff and be more detailed, because we need to wrap our head around that still.
Yeah.
Right. But coming back to very operational kind of things in with Cities Reimagined. So I had all of the episodes transcribed, and I sit on a pile of about 150 A4 single lined pages of transcript of Cities Reimagined. And I think it would be a pity not to use this knowledge and this these outcomes of the podcast. And I was thinking, coming back to AI, that is already now a topic which reoccurs in our conversation. But, you know, it's very difficult to fit in the work of Cities Reimagined in a regular job already. And it would be even more difficult to feed that into, you know, to produce a publication out of that. But I was thinking of somehow trying with AI to make sense out of these interviews by taking the key messages which are distilled out of that and letting AI formulate a text of the transcripts. What are your takes on that? Do you think that would work, or would it be too flat? Would it lose too much nuances, which are actually the value of these conversations?
Well, so let me put it this way, and a little story from one of the courses that I've been part of teaching at my work at university, more or less, where we had the students to analyze two, three pages long research proposals. That is, research proposals are to give you an idea of, hey, there's a problem here, and hey, this is what you can do to solve it, or this is what I can do, and give me money to do it, kind of to shape that kind of interest. And wow, what's going on here? Oh, this is important, right? But we had them analyze and compare one research proposal that was written by a student in the course preceding, and which had a very good grade, and one written by ChatGPT or AI, I think it was ChatGPT. And even though two of the other teachers who actually sat down and tried to have the AI write the proposal, after a couple of iterations, they thought, okay, this is probably as much time as we have and is as good as it gets. Within 2 seconds, my students oh, this is the AI. It's flat. It's not really interesting. It's not really grabbing me. It's just doing the kind of a business pitch, but it's not really setting up a problem, a mystery that,
yeah,
hey, this is where we want to go. So I think it's a good experiment, but I think almost you or we should do one of our own first and then do the experiment.
You mean a summary of a conversation and then trying it with AI to see how it compares? It's a good experiment.
I mean, we'd have to do the synthesis of the 150 pages and then we have AI to do it.
Yeah.
And of course, we can mix it however we want it. It's a bit like if we're going back to music and Taekwondo, perhaps, but music even more so. That I'm very used to do stuff with analog, like acoustic guitars or electric guitars. But mixing that with kind of more machine and programmed sounds, it's not a thing today.
Yeah.
It actually makes for a lot of very interesting music. I think it was very interesting also when, I think, back in the days when Kraftwerk were kind of in their early days, they were doing it and so on. So I don't think it's more about how, if we find it interesting and engaging enough to do that kind of a mix. And for us, it's about finding time to do the synthesis.
Yeah. I will keep it in mind. It would be very interesting to try something out and see if we find a way which makes sense. Where we don't think that too much is lost in the going via machine while, you know, producing something meaningful eventually.
Yeah. So my point was perhaps that, I mean, usually drum machines in their own right, they don't really groove, but sometimes they can unexpectedly groove because of it's a bit queer, quaint, the things that kind of brings how a groove actually emerges from when you're playing together.
Let's try it. We will see. All right, but I think that leads us to the last point I would like to discuss with you today. And that is a bit also about the future and season two of Cities Reimagined. And that is a bit, mixing formats. So for the first season, there were these conversations and they're good as they are. I also learned that it is it makes a more interesting conversation when you have three people. So me as moderating and then two others joining, and it makes a more lively discussion or a more lively exchange. Jonas, what are your takes on the formats for the next season? So I thought about, we also talked about that, having kind of shorts covering specific urban phenomena in maybe a 10-minute discussion. We had this example of Italian man who apparently tend to stand around construction sites and being smart on commenting on what is happening on the what was the name? Umarell? I think it was Umarell.
Umarell.
Yeah. I think there's much to unpack there because it could be, you know, the reasons and the interest of these Italian older men could be that it is a form of socialization. It's a form of community engagement, but we don't need to go into that now. Otherwise we'd produce a short right now. I wanted to discuss with you, shall we have these shorts? And then the second one is, I initially thought it would be good to have confrontations on the show, having opposing standpoints, two people with opposing standpoints on the show discussing it. But then this morning when I prepared for our conversation, I actually thought like, no, this is not, I would not like that because it is, there is already so much confrontation everywhere, but actually rather I would like to bring two opposites together to have a kind of, you know, creating a kind of understanding between them, you know, not going into the, calling it a confrontation, but having two opposing standpoints and it eventually figuring out I wouldn't say middle ground, but what is it, where are the connections? You know, listening to the other ideas and other standpoints, and thus maybe contributing to understanding the Godzilla.
Yeah, or making friends.
Making friends.
It's not always fully understanding, but understanding some of it might be helpful. I guess what I also hear is something that we know in political philosophy as the difference between antagonism, like understanding politics as you have antagonists and they are trying to destroy each other, which we have a lot in the US-American kind of politics, it seems, especially so at the moment. On the other hand, you have an ideal or an idea about how you could work in an agonistic way. That is, you share some values, perhaps one of them being we shouldn't destroy our opponents by any means necessary, but rather trying to figure out ways, and it's usually quite uncomfortable, ways of shedding light on different sides of the issue, right?
Yeah.
And then that's the kind of becomes an ideal for democratic discussion or constructive democratic discussion and so on. That's Chantal Mouffe, I guess, is the kind of the origin of how that's conceptualized. And I think that's a very good way to go. Thinking about that as a format, there might be a way of having one of these shorts, and then you have two people talking about that with who perhaps don't agree to interpretations, what it means, what possible consequences X or Y could have, and so on. Right.
Yeah, excellent.
And I think they both should have one cake each that they can throw in each other's faces.
What kind of cake? Cherry? Or
yeah, but lots of cream, otherwise it hurts.
A lot of cream, yeah. It needs to be a thick one, a thick cake. Big, thick cake. Yeah, excellent. So season two will be about Godzilla's cake, regenerative AI. Is that what came out of this?
Yeah.
I think so. Very interesting.
I really have a sense of that there is a genuine challenge here for you in the next season, how to deal with complexity and still make accessible stories or conversation out of it. So I do think that that's where the formats are playing a lot of a role. And it depends on how much people are willing to give you kind of loose shackles to fuck around and find out.
Yeah.
In this.
I think we will just try it out. I think this is the thematic challenge. I have a very practical challenge to see how I fit in producing Cities Reimagined, now being back on the job and having other projects on the side as well. So since this is just an add-on, a free time project, it will be quite challenging. But I enjoy it so much, and I get so much out of it, so much joy out of it, and so much pleasure. And I think it really touches up on very interesting points, which are worth diving in for many. At least the feedback I got is really positive, that people find it useful. Yes.
But one question a bit more specific to this might be perhaps something that I'm learning more from the kind of the artsy stuff is, how would I put it? How do you do this in a way where you perhaps counter what a lot of communication professionals say, that you should think about your audience, the target audience, and so on, think about making it accessible. But how do you think it would be possible to do without thinking about them at all and just do it because you need find joy in doing it and need to have these conversation and these different aspects of urbanity move along?
And I think that is exactly the pleasure in it, because I'm very free to explore whatever topic in whatever form I want to, right? So I'm not bound to think about target audiences, how to get the message out, how to do that. It's either I get the joy out of it, and it's I find it somehow meaningful, and I hope that it is also meaningful for others. So it is a more like it's not seeking the people who receive, but more like seeing if there's like-minded people or people who also find that helpful, and seeing how to go along. And that has a bit of a different logic out there. Mm-hmm. Because I personally kind of take joy, you know, just I kind of take joy to be on a personal budget producing these shows, and then comparing myself to initiatives and organizations which are loaded with money, and you see on social media you get more likes or more interactions to the stuff you produce without a budget than them. That is a bit of a, I have to say, that is a bit of a personal joy as well. But that brings me a bit to what I also learned over the last year, that it is so important to be kind of authentic in what you do, in what you personally do, but also it might create more inspiration if people are very authentic, very open, if they share some vulnerabilities, some uncertainties, do not try to shine out whoever else is out there, but you know, having very honest conversations which are joyful at the end of the day.
Yeah, you're speaking like a true musician.
Musician. Yeah, that comes because I'm at the moment again reading Rick Rubin. All right, I think that leaves us with a lot of secrets and cliffhangers for season two, right? So we didn't solve Godzilla. We got to know Godzilla a bit better, and now it's about us to pull him a bit closer and make him a closer friend, isn't it?
Yeah. And I would be surprised if anyone is any wiser after this season finale show.
Oh, don't you think so? I hope so.
Yeah, maybe.
And even if not, I had a great time talking to you, Jonas.
Oh, yeah.
And you made
this was great.
You made a great remix of the Cities Reimagined jingles, which we will play right now. So Jonas, thank you so much for being on the show again, and yeah, have a good weekend.
Thank you. Looking forward to the next.
Yeah,
what's
thanks.
Coming. Thanks a lot, Johannes.
Yeah, you made it to the end of this wild episode of the season finale of Cities Reimagined. Cities Reimagined will take a break from here and will hopefully come back around, let's say, September, October of this year. Let's see how it goes. If we don't come back, then this is the only season of Cities Reimagined, which is also fine because, you know, there's other projects just starting for me now, and I'm not sure if I have the time to run this podcast still after that. And yeah, having said that, I actually would love to continue it because it is very, very rewarding. So if you like the content, please share it with your friends and colleagues. Give it a like on social media and on your favorite podcasting platform. And with that, we play you out today with a remix of the Cities Reimagined jingle by Jonas Bülent. It's the Godzilla's Fury remix. So give it a listen. It's also a wild one, just like this episode. I hope you enjoyed it. And I hope to catch you soon.